Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don, and we're travelling to the other side of the planet now to catch up with Gareth Wynne-Jones, a prolific social media podcaster and YouTuber and Instagrammer and you name it. He does everything. He was on Paul Brennan's breakfast show about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and he sort of set the scene for his farming systems and what he's up against. But Gareth, great to have you back on our show, because we want to know what the common ground between New Zealand and Wales is, because farming in New Zealand's not a box of birds either, and we gather farming in the UK, let alone Wales, is not a box of birds. And you know, you seem so distant from 10 Downing Street. You know, farming needs better out of our governors, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's slightly different in Wales, to be honest with you. I think we've got a lot of the same problems, you know, tree planting, solar farms, a lot of misleading information about livestock agriculture. I think that's a global problem, from, you know, methane to carbon and everything that goes with it. Anyway, in the UK, so we've got, in Wales, our agricultural sectors devolved. So we have a Welsh government, Welsh Assembly government, who since the breakup or out of Europe, they take the money from Westminster. So that's then handed down to the farming. So at this moment in Wales, we have what they call an SFS, a sustainable farming scheme on the horizon. So as you know, before, farmers were paid per acre for the type of land they had. It'd gone away from production use quite a few years ago. So this was most probably not the fairest system. You know, there was a lot of people that could stay in the industry and cut their livestock units down. So, you know, I think our main aim is to produce food affordably to feed the nation. That's what I think. You know, the benefits of that are environmentally friendly systems. We've been on this farm for 375 years, and you know, there's a lot of nature, there's a lot of carbon catchment, there's a lot of clean water, and there's a lot of livestock here. So, you know, the balance, the flora and fauna, is everything that we protect as a farming family. So the SFS is around the corner, which was not taken well by the Welsh farmers, where they spoke about giving us 10% tree cover on every single farm and 10% habitat. So that's been changed a little bit, and there's some universal levels. I'm not going to go too deep into the legislations and the, you know, the policies so far, because it hasn't been passed. It's still, you know, being spoken about. It looks like they've taken away that 10% tree cover, but it will be in for 2030. I really need to go through it properly. I haven't had time yet. It was released on Monday at the Royal Welsh Winter Fair. So that's one. We've got NVZs in Wales. I'm not sure if you have these nitro vulnerable zones, where you're not allowed to carry slurry. So we're not allowed to carry slurry onto farmland from the 26th of October. So, you know, we've had most probably the driest October, November in years, and nobody's been allowed to carry onto field. So we cannot really farm with government calendars. You know, farmers aren't going to run onto a field with slurry for that to run onto rivers. I can understand some of these places do need you know, a cutoff point where it's too close to the river or the water table's low, but put that a blanket ban across Wales, ridiculous again.
And so we have similar issues here, not quite the same, but where you have the regulator trying to say you will have a cutoff date to have your crops in the ground, or you will do XYZ by a certain date. And so what factual, my issue has always been, put up the facts, show us the evidence, and then we can perhaps comply or actually fight back. So do you have a lot of fact-based presentations to say that you must not do this effluent dispersion?
No, not really. No. It's just something that some policymaker down in an ivory tower has come up with a bright idea. And do you know what's frustrating? For the last 10, 12, 15 years, farmers have been blamed for, you know, damaging the watercourses, putting slurry into the rivers. You know, there's been a few cases. But now, you know, there's FOIs, Freedom of Information, coming out. And it is the massive water corporations that have been dumping sewage straight into rivers, straight into lakes. You know, the public are beginning to listen to the farmer. You know, we've been blamed for everything. I think mainstream media has a big part to play in this. A lot of the big blokes, you know, the big mainstream media channels, outlets in this country have been very, very farmer negative, always pointing the finger, always trying to put more pressure on the livestock sector. And, you know, the chicken sector have had a pretty rough time as well with this pollution bit. And I really, really don't believe that I know any farmer that will go out to pollute anything. You know, they're trying their best to produce affordable, seasonal, healthy, nutritious food to feed the masses. And all we get is a kick in the bloody bollocks every day.
Yeah. Well, it's not uncommon. It's the same thing here. And I have this line, Gareth, that we go naked in public and we seem to be fair game. We are the most visible profession, perhaps, in the world. A bit like mining, fishing, not quite the same. But you know, it doesn't seem, and it sounds like you're saying the same, nothing will satisfy these people until they've got us on our knees. And it sounds like with the protests that are happening in the UK, and a few years ago we had them in New Zealand, and the Dutch protests of last year, it just seems that the thin end of the wedge is right now. And farmers in your country are definitely fighting back, and you're one of the leaders of that. How are you picking up the sentiment now? Are they desperate?
I'm not sure if I'm one of the leaders. I'm a very vocal person. You know, I speak my mind. I'm a bit like Marmite. A lot of people like me and a lot of people bloody hate me. but I don't really care. You know, my job is to protect the future for my children. We've got this inheritance tax fiasco that's come from Westminster now. So that's the London government who came in with a new budget. Keir Starmer had stood up in the NFU conference in February and said how he was going to protect family farms, da, 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 da. Same shit, different day. Excuse my French, but it really, really boils my piss because this is what's important. He gets his first budget, and what does he do? What does this man do? He puts a 20% inheritance tax on farms, okay? So the threshold was 1 million. If you're in, you know, married, it could go up to 3 million. Now, I look around this area, and they're not affluent farmers, okay? They're just average family farms. Every single farm I know is worth more than 1 million. You know, they haven't done the logical sums on it. And for them to say it was only going to hit 20% of the farming community, 20%, okay? This is how stupid these people are in government. How these lunatics get these jobs, I don't know. They've been crunching the numbers now, and it looks like it'll be closer to 70% of the agricultural sector that will be hit by this inheritance tax. Now, you know, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a professor. You know, I haven't got letters after my name, but I can understand that every single farm that I know are on shoestrings, you know. The profit in the job is very, very small from, you know, the red tape we have to go through at the moment to the supermarkets pushing prices down. All these things, inflation on our diesel, on our fertilizers, on our feed, all these things have to go somewhere. Now, Labour should be protecting the poor. And what they haven't realized in what they've done is they've taxed the poor at source, and that is through their food, because either food has to inflate 20 to 30% again, or farmers go out of business. And I'll tell you for a fact, and I don't care what anybody says, we are sleepwalking into food shortages. You know, every single country is bringing down food production. This is a global thing. We've seen it in New Zealand. You know, we're seeing it in Wales, where acres and acres are being planted. We're seeing it with solar farms. We're seeing it with developments of new houses. Yeah, look, we need land. We are on a small island with a growing population. Food security must be at the top, and food affordability should be at the top. And none of these numpties have taken this into consideration. And this is why we are sleepwalking into food shortages, and the poorer people in society will be the first to suffer. So shame on them. I said this, shame on them, on live television to Lisa and Andy, that they haven't got an idea of what they're doing. You know, we need to be protecting the people that are producing the food. And it's not supermarkets, it's not governments, it's farmers. But what I can tell you is we are having unbelievable, and I'm telling you from the heart, unbelievable support from the general public. I have never seen it the same. You know, okay, there's a few on the far left, pay your taxes. We pay our taxes. We pay our taxes on everything like everybody else. And they're the people that are going to be shocked on their asses when there's no food on them supermarket shelves, or when that food is on that supermarket shelf, they can't afford it. And I hate to say it, I can't wait to say, I told you so, you didn't listen. And then governments will be scrambling to start growing food again, to start producing more grub to feed these people. It's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. And if they believe what we are doing is ruining the planet, I just don't understand where they get it from. We are part of the solution, not the problem. And they need to understand that. You know, the animals we have got are in a carbon cycle, you know, especially the ruminants. They're the ones that are developing so much food, but turning over that carbon and that methane in a cycle. You know, the rest of it is all hot air in the wind. And there's a lot worse industries than agriculture that are polluting this earth. And the scary thing is, the ones that are polluting are then buying land in Wales and planting trees and offsetting their carbon. What a flipping joke. What a joke.
It is greenwashing to its zenith. I want to pick up on the inheritance tax you mentioned, Gareth. The figures that are given are something like £500 million is what's going to be coming out of it. And they say farmers and the rural people should be paying their fair share towards the infrastructure. The figures I have seen say that £500 million is about 24 hours for the NHS. But at the same time, the British government is sending more than £500 million, closer to £550 billion, overseas to countries like Brazil, to Rwanda, to grow tea for the first time, to help sustainable farming elsewhere while driving its own farmers out of business. This makes no sense.
Makes no sense at all. It's robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, that money should be put into sustainable and innovation in this country. You know, we should be protecting the people that are on this island. Now, I hate to say it, but charity starts at home. We've got people in food banks in this country. We've got people that can't afford, you know, to get their next meal. Now, this should be addressed. And why are we sending money abroad again? You know, the administration and the, you know, the top heavy public sector cannot be held up by the private sector. I hate to say it, you know, it's too top heavy. We should go into a lot of these NHSs and into Whitehall. And we should be saying, what's your job? You know, you're on 60, 70,000. What are you doing? You know, these people are sucking out of the private sector. And I hate to say it, every single one of them is going to need a farmer once, twice or three times a day. And they haven't realised that. And by putting that money into other countries, it's really, really demoralised and hurt the agricultural sector in the UK. Because there's a lot of stuff that are coming out now, which is not just the Labour government. So the Conservatives have put some money into that. So I'm not just going to blame Labour government. It's governments across the board that haven't understood the importance of farming. And we're one of the last industries left in the UK. There's nothing left here. You know, they closed the coal mines. Let's take this into example. They closed the coal mines. What did they do? Import cheap coal from other countries. They've closed a massive big steel works now down in Port Talbot. Thousands of people have got lost their jobs, you know, and they're going to make it into a green electric kind of steel producer. But they're shipping all the steel, all the coal from other countries, and that carbon footprint and that, you know, it's 10 times worse. Absolute lunatics. And if we look at the UK, we're 1% of the whole carbon release in the world. 1%, okay? So if we fell into the sea tomorrow, what iota of a difference would it make? Nothing. Because the rest of them are carrying on. And if we want to be global leaders, we need to be protecting the people on this island by making sure that we have a food system that can feed everybody for 12 months of the year, affordably, seasonally, and environmentally friendly. And we've got the technology, we've got the innovation, and we've got the skill set. But there's people going out of the industry now that have had the belly full. They're selling up. I've just had a friend now. He had a big dairy farm. He's had enough. He was under TB for 18 months. He was losing £35,000 a month. He's out. I've never, ever in my life remembered so many farms for sale. It's never happened, you know? And what they have forgotten as well, this silly government, is the big landowners have got tenanted farms. Now, they are going to have to claw that money back somewhere. And if the tenants don't understand that they're going to hit, which they are, they must be absolutely cacking themselves about what's going to happen. So the whole ethos of this inheritance tax in the beginning was to protect food and farming and production. And now there is a good chance that could be totally lost, with people losing their tenanted farms, people losing their farms or 20% of their farms so they can pay that inheritance tax. And they say you can pay it over 10 years. I don't care. I don't want to be paying it over 10 years. I want to pay my tax, and I don't mind paying corporate tax. I don't mind paying all the taxes and anything. But that inheritance tax is the final nail in the agricultural coffin in the United Kingdom.
So just a point there, Gareth. Who is buying these farms when you say your friend is just calling it quits because he's losing 35 grand a month? Who is going to be buying these farms? Is it the corporate ownership getting larger and larger?
To be fair, it's a family-run farm that's bought his farm. But if you look across the board in Wales, there's some big, big hitters like British Airways and German companies, Dutch companies coming in, buying land. And again, like I said to you, offsetting carbon by growing trees. And yep. I think all this trees stuff is bullshit, sorry, because, you know, them trees aren't going to sequence any carbon for 10 years, you know, and we know grass is sequencing carbon, as much carbon in that cycle, you know, and we're producing food off it. And once you take that land out of food production, it's gone. It's gone for 50 or 100 years. We've seen it after the Second World War up here in Wales, across the mountains, where they put these massive conifer jungles, which were wildlife deserts. Nothing lived in them. Nothing lived with them. And they were all done because they were going to use them, that a lot of that wood then down in South Wales in the coal mines, which is quite, it's quite just, you see where I'm going with this? You know, you plant something and then you get rid of the whole industry that you planted it for. And now a lot of these forestries that they're being harvested aren't even financially viable, and they caused acid rain. I just don't understand how stupid these policymakers and these governments are.
We are hearing other countries say that developed countries need to pay their share of the money, and nothing's happening. But at the same time, we have countries like India who are now suddenly applauding the fact that last year, India, it mined 1 billion tons of coal and lignite. Meanwhile, the rest of us are just shutting shop.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's a developing country. It's been a poor country, and they want to make better for their people. Can we blame them? Not really, you know. Even that is, so they say, making a massive big climate problem. But what I'm saying, in our country, you know, we shouldn't be picking up the bits or trying to put pressure on our residents while other countries just carry on doing, you know, as they want. And China's even bigger, aren't they? You know, China's even bigger, and everything comes from China now, from these, you know, solar panels, and nobody's really asking the question, what is this green revolution costing? What is it costing, you know, from the concrete that goes into the wind turbines, you know, to how much that plastic and solar. And I'm not against green energy. And you know, I'm not against planting trees, believe it or not, but the right tree in the right place, you know, hedges and edges. I love hedgerows. We've got a lot of hedgerows here. I think hedgerows can be a massive carbon catchment. We've got a big mountain range, 27,000 acres, which has hundreds and thousands of tons of carbon being stored on it. You know, and we've got them white fluffy things grazing that all through the summer and keeping that vegetation down. So, you know, it helps with not having fires during the summer. It's something that we have to educate some people within the public about, that farmers are here to help. Okay, we're businesses, we need to make money, but we're here to help by producing affordable food and making sure there's a future of food production and food security in the UK. Well, worldwide, actually. It's not just a UK thing, because I think the whole production sector of agriculture worldwide has been pulled down.
Yeah, look, and I've got a view, Gareth, that our animals, our ruminant animals, they're the ultimate producers. They're the ultimate producers of herbivore meat, and they're the ultimate UV receptor. They're the ultimate solar farm, you might think, but they've never been talked about like that. And so, another aside, I love the hat I saw on a bit of social media today. It said, "Stuck farmer." And you can play with that and you get some pretty unkind words.
I've got the
words.
T-shirt.
You've got the T-shirt. I thought it was fabulous. They're the sort of gimmicks. You need gimmicks. As if I've got any history or anything to advise the current activist model, you need gimmicks to take the public with you. Now, in 2003, New Zealand had what was called the FART rally. It was Fight Against Ridiculous Taxes. It's when the first attempt to tax methane from animals was first put up, and it was defeated. The public were well and truly on side. Here we are 23 years later, or 22 years later, and we've just taken ETS, agriculture, out of the ETS. The Danes are just putting it in and saying we will tax methane, but what has happened in 22 years? The public has been worked over and worked over and worked over, and the farmers had to really fight to get this methane taxing potential out of the books. So, you know, what are we up against? Yeah, we've got a few minutes left. We like free trade. I think you like free trade, but are we against the free move? You know, you've got a mass migration happening in the United Kingdom, like in the United States, and even in New Zealand and Australia. We have mass migration happening, unfettered almost, it seems, because our infrastructure can't keep up. We haven't got enough houses. We haven't got enough roads. We haven't got enough hospitals. We haven't got enough schools. And someone's got to pay for that. So, yeah, we've got similarities there. We like competition in our food production, or do we want restrictive trade? I think we like free competition, unfettered, I would imagine. We want We want the consumers of the of our foods to have choice. But what I think we have in most in common, listening to you, is that we have property rights, the owner-operator, we're sticking up for them, as opposed to the state command and control model. That seems to be what's coming out of Westminster, and in some ways coming out of our parliament in past years anyway as well. So we have common ground. Where's the uncommon ground here? I'm struggling to find it. We have the same stories, same issues. Everybody's coming at that kilogram of meat, the kilogram of milk solids, the chunk of protein, the fish, the coal even. Everyone wants a chunk of the action, but they're all in suits and they're all writing policy, telling us what we can't do. Do you find that they are they have no conscience when they do this? Do you find that that's I don't know the word for it. It's like having your cake and eating it too, is how they're doing it. And I don't know, but all my farming activist life, it's been this. Why do so many people want to cut my lunch and use regulation to do it? I think you've got this. That's the common ground in your neck of the woods as well.
I think this is a worldwide problem, okay? And I think, you know, we need a farming food revolution across the world. I think the farmers of the world should unite. We should be talking more together because it is a global problem. And for us to make a difference, we have to be united globally. We have to work together to find solutions. Nothing's perfect, okay? Nothing's perfect within our industry. But we have most probably the first and the oldest industry in the world that needs to be protected. And I think we are at a crossroads because every single government is putting legislations and more sanctions on what we do. Now, the way to do that, and the only way to do that, is to get public support. So, you know, we've been saying, don't bite the hand that feeds you, now to our government and to the public. And you know what? The feedback we're getting from the public at the moment has never been stronger. So we need to be putting onto our social media and onto our different platforms is our problems. And we need that farming voice because mainstream media is not giving us that opportunity. So by working together and finding solutions, and I think that's why, you know, my social media presence is building so quickly. I've done television work, you know, I worked for the BBC for about 8 years, and I just found it frustrating that you can't say what you think. Okay, I'm quite good at swearing. I'm quite passionate, I'm quite honest, but I try to be as factual as I can. And if I do get it wrong every now and again, I put my hands up in the air and I say, well, I got that wrong. And I think honesty is a great policy as well going forward. But the main driver here is to get the public behind us so the public understands that they are going to be paying a lot more for their food. And if they're not going to be paying for that meat, for that milk, it's going to be gloop that's been produced by big multinational corporations, from, you know, the vegans and the vegetarians to the, you know, to the carnivores, to the pescatarians,
to the ones who decide to tell us, you know, this is how many grams of meat we can have per day, all of those. But Gareth, before you go, can you give us a sense of what's happening now? Because all we heard was about the protests a couple of weeks ago, but there's more action on the ports now, isn't there?
Yeah, so the Welsh farmers closed the ports, you know, for a few hours, kept a few lorries back. We are not trying to make people suffer. We're not trying to make people hungry. But what we are trying to prove to the general public, this is what your future is going to look like. You know, this is what's going to happen if we have a climate problem like we've had in Spain now, which ship a lot of the you know, the salads and the veg into the country over the winter months. So there's a lot of things that we have to show to these people. And that's the whole reasoning behind it. We do not want people going hungry, but we are at a crossroads and there is going to be more demonstrations. There's going to be a demonstration on the 11th of December down in London, where tractors will be running into Westminster and around the area. Of course, peaceful again, but it's a point where we can hopefully get the global media to showcase it. And if they don't, we are going to be putting it globally on our social media channels. So we need you as much as you need us. So I think these conversations going forward will be maybe a little bit more frequent, and hopefully that we can, you know, work together, listening to your problems and us sending, you know, our stats and our problems, so we can get people across the world understanding this is not just an agricultural problem in Wales, in the UK, but it's, you know, it's Canada, it is America, it's New Zealand, it's the Netherlands, it's France, it's Spain, it's Poland. All these countries have got their challenges. But everything comes from government. Every single challenge comes from government. And I think that's what we need to start asking the question to our government is, you know, are you doing the right thing? And once the public and, you know, the supermarkets are beginning to back us now because they're beginning to get worried. So once the public start to see this, they get behind it.
All right. Yeah, fantastic. Last question, Gareth. I know you've got to go. So the Brexit vote was quite close in the Wales country. So I looked at that and I thought, gee, that was closer than I expected. We have also interviewed people from the Netherlands. And since the tractor protests and the leading up to the European Parliament's vote earlier this year, June, in fact, we were getting regular sort of feedback from there. As soon as that vote was taken, our contact has gone to ground. What do you think? Has it been a positive or a negative thing leaving Brexit for Wales? And secondly, would it have made any difference to the problems you've got today anyway?
Well, to be totally honest with you, I voted Remain. You know, I wanted to stay part of the European Union. But democracy, you know, has to be respected. And when democracy and the people vote, we have to go with it. Yeah, we are now seeing the differences. So the last couple of years have been quite good. Lamb prices are okay, beef prices are okay. But we've been very fortunate that we had an open market of our lamb into Europe. If that would have closed after Brexit, a lot of family farms in Wales would have been, you know, dead in the water. But now the money comes from Westminster and not from Europe, as in for the agricultural budget. So we are seeing differences in the way it's going to be structured to what the policies were coming from Europe. But mainly, same shit, different day. I'm sorry to say that. But that's how it really, really looks there. There isn't much difference. And I think, truthfully, going forward, I think the only way is for us to fight our corner and get the general public behind us. And, you know, I'd much rather have a fair price for what I'm producing than to be subsidised. I don't really want to be subsidised. I don't want to be planting trees. I don't want draconian measures of some guy coming to test every field, finding out how many nutrients I've got, how much carbon. You know, this is our land. We've paid for this land. We want to farm it, but we're here doing a job to the general public to feed the nation. And I think that's what we need to get out. And that's what I said before. A farming food revolution is needed worldwide, and we need the general public to get behind agriculture, food production, and start to understand it's not the people in suits living in their ivory towers drinking their oatmeal lattes that are going to be feeding you. It's going to be us.
That's right. This world wasn't made by people in suits. It was made by people in boots. I'm being very PC by saying people, but that's how it is. I saw that in a sign in a shop frontage in Uruguay, in Montevideo, actually, and I thought that stuck with me ever since. It said this country wasn't made by men in suits. It was made by men in boots. And I think that's where we are. So, hey, fantastic, Gareth. Great you could come on at short notice and give us your penny's worth. And we would love to have you back on because there's a lot more to talk about. We've not even touched the surface. Thank you.
No problem.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio. /donate.